to Shattering Mess just to add a little more information on the Turkish case. The background of this is that Erdogan has been disclosed as a fraud. There are numerous recordings of him having conversations with his sons about ill-gotten gain, about money they have come into possession of through the acceptance of bribes. It has mostly to deal with pipeline rights for transferring Caspian Sea oil and gas across Turkey and to facilitate the eminent domain and to establish the route. They've used their political power, and they have been rewarded financially and personally for doing so. And so Erdogan has been caught having conversations with his sons as to how to launder that money. And that's pretty embarrassing. But, you know, in the Islamic world, they are so devoutly religious. And in that religion, lying is considered an effective ploy. It is lawful to lie in Islam, considered actually appropriate to lie, beneficial to lie, that the 70% of Turks who are fundamentalist Muslims are rallying around Erdogan while Erdogan attacks those who are willing to tell the truth. And so it's exactly what you had said, Glenn. So you've got Erdogan trying to prevent people from having access to all of the negative information regarding him, his thievery. And so what they've done is they've blocked the URLs, the website names, for the websites that have been established to expose him. And by the way, those that are exposing him are almost all associated with a fundamentalist Islamic cleric living in the United States who was once an ally. And then, so what the Turks are doing is they're getting around it by going to domains that are found on servers run by Google Level 3 and OpenDNS that are difficult to control. And so now the Turkish government has attempted to cut off this rerouting by telling Turkish ISPs to hijack the addresses and to redirect traffic to a page that says that the site cannot be found. Now, that is an international law right now. That is a crime. You cannot redirect traffic away from a internet site. And so what he's asking is that the Turkish government become criminal.
Well, what a tattered World Wide Web we weave when first we purpose to deceive. modern analog of book burning.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It is exactly. It's the modern analog to book burning. You know, it's even the, it brings to mind, of course, the story of the Florida Christian pastor who garnered so much attention for himself when he barbecued a Quran. And, you know, my response is, don't do that. Just don't do it. Is it an evil book? Absolutely. Is it revolting in every way? Yes. Is it the worst book ever written? Absolutely. It is the worst book ever written, the Quran. You know, it has no chronological presentation. It's totally, there is no chronological nature to the whole thing. There's no topical arrangement of the material. It's like all the material were picked up in a tornado and just pieced together, however it fell together. So there's no context of any kind to it. It starts with a never-ending argument of between Muhammad and those who knew him best. And those who knew him best said that he was demon-possessed, that he was motivated by sex, power, and money, and that he was a complete fraud. And that's the first three quarters of the Quran. And then the last of the verses revealed, although they're not at the end of the Quran, because the Quran is not chronological, have Muhammad declaring war against all humankind. First, Jews, hunting them into extinction in Arabia, robbing and raping them, enslaving them, murdering them. And then he moved on to Christians when he had overhunted Jews. And finally, he makes his own people, fellow Arabs, the enemy. And so rather than burn it, the thing I would encourage is people to read it. You know, if you take the time to read the Quran, you're not going to be taking the side of the Arab bank.
Yeah, follow the path of Sun Tzu, not Hitler. You know, Hitler burned books. Sun Tzu advocated reading them, even if they were your enemies.
Yeah, I mean, there is much of it, and I've read Sun Tzu's works, and there's much that he says that is practical.
No, I just meant about knowing your enemy. That's all I meant, you know. The match isn't so horrible, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Know your enemy. If you want to, most people aren't even aware that Islam is an enemy. But if you read the Quran, if you read the Hadith, or if you want somebody to take the Quran and the Hadith and put them together and rearrange them chronologically and set them into the context of Muhammad's life and save you enormous amount of time, spend 50 hours and read Prophet of Doom. It's free, Prophet of Doom. .net, at least when Muslims aren't trying to hack it. It's not difficult. And in that regard, knowing your enemy, it's essential. It's why we do this program the way we do it. It's important that people know that their government, their religions, their economic institutions are working against them, are counterproductive. So it's important that you know who your enemy is and what your enemy is doing. And in that regard, the most important tool is to read.
One thing I wanted to say about the banks before, our government is presuming to, even to harass the heretofore sector, saying, you know, Swiss banks, Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, the Caribbean, all the offshore tax shelter banks. But like I said, historically, there has been, there's been almost like a gentleman's agreement not to touch that, you know.
Correct.
And now they're going to say, oh, they won't touch the Jordanian.
But speaking of hypocrisy, there's another story that is really raising its ugly head here, and that is Pollard. Pollard is the convicted American who passed on naval information to the Israelis, and he has served, I think it's between 20 and 30 years in prison for something that if he had worked for an avowed enemy of America as opposed to an ally of America, he probably would have served somewhere between no time and just have been deported back to the enemy up to maybe a year or two, and he's still in prison. When you set that realization that Pollard, after nearly 30 years, is still in prison for passing on information to the only ally America has in the Middle East, when the President of the United States called it unproductive that the Israelis would not follow their demand and release the remaining 100 or so Islamic terrorists from prison to aid and abet their peace plan. So the United States is demanding that Israel release convicted terrorists and murderers from prison to advance their peace plan. And yet this man, who didn't harm anyone, they want to continue to incarcerate.
Well, see, things certainly have changed since the time of Julius Nethel Rosenberg, eh?
Yes. Yes. They have, you know, there's a whole batch of information that says that he was framed for something that was actually done in the administration, and that he was the patsy that took the blame for what FDR and others and Truman did.
Okay. Well, I was just referring to the standard reading where, you know what I mean? It's like back in the good old days, if somebody was caught doing espionage, they just, you know.
You just killed him.
Capital punishment.
Yeah, I killed him. Yeah, that's because dead men tell no tales is the reason I think that the Rosenbergs were killed. First of all, it's a Jewish name. It's a Jewish name, and it's easy to blame the Jews for malfeasance. And if you frame a Jew, then you're a hero of a lot of people because deep down, a lot of people are anti-Semitic.
God, it seems like I can't believe anybody in government in high places these days.
No, you. If you were to distrust most everything that you hear, if your standard go-to position was the State Department, your congressman, your senator, your president, everyone within the Department of State, your Justice Department, Treasury, the Federal Reserve, are lying. If that's your go-to position, is what they're saying is actually the opposite of the truth, you'll be right the preponderance of the time. That's how bad it's become. Well, Glenn, one of the things I want to do here, and you're welcome to continue to... to participate.
I should bow out, thanks, because I work night shift at night. I forget the last time I had more than an hour and a half sleep.
Well, you know, for a guy that is operating with one oar in the water, your comments on what is causing Americans to have situational ethics now based upon what they have been conditioned to do, that's pretty astute for a guy that doesn't have all of his oars in the water this morning. Very impressive. Get a good night's sleep. I want to turn to the email exchange between myself and Adam Miller. Adam Miller is the syndication. It works in syndication for GCM, and so this is an advantage because it not only helps those who work in syndication for GCM to know what this program is all about, it also helps those who are new listeners to the program know what it's all about. It's one thing, you know, for us having done this now for better part of 2 years, to assume that most everyone who is listening is up to speed on where we have come from and what we stand for, but occasionally just to go back to the basics. What is this program all about? And to a large degree, I think Adam's questions and his statements bring us back to that position. So if you don't mind, we're going to spend the rest of this hour going over his questions. He has given permission to do so. His first was, do you consider yourself a Messianic Christian? He says, I hope you don't mind if I ask some personal questions. My response was, I'm opposed to all religions, including Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and secular socialist humanism. Now, most people wouldn't even think of socialist secular humanism as a religion, but it is the religion of America now. It's the national religion of America. Its moral code is called political correctness. It is the socialist and secular religion that is taught in virtually all academic institutions. It is the religion of politics in America today. In socialist secular humanism, enlightened man serves as God. But it's also important to know that I am not unique, although it is very rare for someone to speak out against all religion, including Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and socialist secular humanism. God is overtly opposed to religion. In fact, you could say, goddamn religion, and be accurate. In response to the question, do you consider yourself a Messianic Christian? I replied that the actual title is Messiah. It's interesting, and I have to tell you, stunningly surprising, that Messiah is never used as a title anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And so, you know, for someone to be so fixated on Messiah, in fact, it is Messiah that Christ claims to be derived from. It's not true, and we'll speak of that in a moment. But there isn't a single place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms where you will find Messiah. In fact, even the Hebrew pronunciation, HaMessiach, the Messiach, and it means the one who is set apart and prepared to serve, that it is never used as with a definite article. And therefore, it cannot be a title. Never once is it preceded by the definite article. You know, it's the king, the pope, the cardinal, the president. Titles are preceded by the definite article. It's not, ever. Moreover, the two times that it appears in Daniel, which is Daniel, speaking of the arrival of this individual, rather than it appearing as an individual bearing the title HaMessiah or anything close to it, what we find is that Messiah is used as a adjective, and it's modifying messenger. And so it's a messenger that is set apart and prepared to serve. So this fixation of Christians on this title Christ, which they think is a transliteration of a translation of the title, Messiah, is inappropriate. There is no title such as that in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. What there is some 22 times there are people named Maaseiah. And Maaseiah, on these 22 times that it is used as a name, is descriptive of what we would expect of the title, if there is such a title. And it means an implement doing the work of Yah. So it's Maaseiah would be the work of Yahweh. Under that basis, it makes sense because it is in fact a effective match for his actual name, which is Yahusha. There is no Jesus. There's no name even remotely akin to Jesus. The name Jesus was first conceived in the 17th century. And you have to ask yourself, if your religion would lie to you about the individual's name they claim their religion is predicated upon, and lie to you about his title, why would you trust them about anything else? There is no Jesus. It isn't a transliteration of the Greek. He wasn't Greek, so he didn't have a Greek name. Those names in Greek, Iusu, Iusus, Iusun, aren't written out in any pre-Constantine, pre-Roman Catholic manuscript of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Never once do they appear as a written out name. And even then, you can't get from Iusu, Iusun, Iusus to Jesus. The ending of those names simply conform to Greek grammar rules to make the name masculine. It wasn't Greek, didn't have a Greek name. And so, if you don't know his name, I'm going to tell you, you don't know him, because his name explains much of what you need to know about him. His name means Yahweh saves. And so the Savior isn't Jesus, even if you got his name right, and you knew that it was Yahusha, which is a combination of Yahweh's name and the Hebrew verb for salvation, Yasha. Even if you knew his name, if you're looking at him for salvation, you're misplaced. You're wrong. Yahweh routinely tells us that he is our Savior. And that's what the name, the designation, Yahusha means, that it's Yahweh saving us. And when you recognize that, then you understand that Yahusha is nothing more, nothing less than a diminished manifestation of Yahweh set apart from him. And recognizing that Yahusha is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, you'd be crazy to focus on Yahusha as opposed to Yahweh. And so a religion based upon, even if it were based upon, and it's not, Yahusha would be misplaced. Because it's Yahweh who is saving us. And Yahusha is nothing but a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. You ought not be considering him. You ought not be looking at him. You ought not be focused on him. You ought to be focused on Yahweh. Which means that the entire basis of the religion of Christianity is completely misplaced. It's wrong. Welcome back to A Shattering Mess. We're considering the errors, fundamental errors in Christianity. And one is that there is a title, Messiah. There just isn't. There's no place in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is Messiah or Masiach used as a title. Even in the famous passages in Daniel, which means God's judges and vindicates, there is no place where it's used as a title. It's used as Masiach is used as a adjective to modify the concept of a messenger, and it means the messenger is set apart and prepared to communicate. And of course, Yahusha became the corporeal manifestation of Yahweh's Torah. And so you have to ask yourself, since Christ has no bearing whatsoever, all Christ is a absolutely horrendous attempt to translate the one of the connotations of Masiach. One of the connotations of Masiach is to anoint. But what anoint means is that you've been chosen, you've been set apart to serve. That's what anointing means. And since anoint is because religious connotations, we ought to be careful and convey its meaning. Now, when I wrote a chapter on Maaseiah for Yadayah, and you'll find it in the Salvation volume of Yadayah. Go to yadayah.com. I looked at every time Maaseiah was used to see if Yahweh defined the word for us. And what you find is that it means to be set apart and prepared for service. Never a title. Now, enter Christianity. They came up with a translation in Greek for the title, but what's odd, and they say that it's that the translation is Christos. But you've got some real problems with that. And then they base the religion on that name, Christian. But it's all a pile of lies. You see, first of all, Christos means to apply drugs. That's what it means in Hebrew. It's the application of drugs. It's so to be a Christian would be to be drugged. The actual translation term, we have multiple affirmations of this, is Christus, not Christos. Now, the reason it's difficult to know and the reason it takes some time to investigate is that the Christus translation of the name never appears anywhere in the so-called Christian New Testament. Never once. Just as you'll never find Yahusha's name written out on any page of any manuscript of the so-called Christian New Testament prior to Constantine. Every manuscript is the same in both regards. And they use divine placeholders. Two or three letters capitalized with a line over them to say that this is a placeholder for the actual name. This is a placeholder for the actual title. They do it in exactly the same manner as the Septuagint. At least Septuagints that had been written within a couple of hundred years of the time that these documents, these eyewitness accounts, were first scribed. And what the Septuagint did initially is that Septuagint is a Greek translation of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Initially just the Torah, but later the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And this Greek translation initially kept Yahweh's name, Yahusha's name, written in Hebrew. So you would read a Greek translation of the Hebrew until you came to a name, and Yahweh presents his own name 7,000 times, and then you would see Yahweh's name written out in Hebrew. And the reason for that is that in the Greek alphabet, they do not have letters to convey the sound of Yahweh's name accurately. So they wrote it in Hebrew. And then after a while, since Greek became a favored language, and because of the occupation of Yehuda by Greece and then by Rome, Hebrew was less known. And therefore, those names became Greek placeholders. So in the Septuagint, when you saw Yahweh's name or Yahusha's name, you would have a Greek placeholder in exactly the same way that you'll find them in the eyewitness accounts prior to Constantine, the first 69, the total of 69 manuscripts that have been unearthed from the first, second, and third, and even early fourth centuries. They're all consistent in that they use placeholders to convey Yahusha and Maaseiah. And so there never should have been a Greek name or title transliterating or translating the Hebrew concept. It is a Hebrew title. Should have remained as a Hebrew title. You know, we call Caesar Caesars. We don't call them kings. We call Russian kings czars because we're transliterating the term from the title from that language. It's what we do. I know an imam is, that's a transliteration of the Arabic. That's just the nature of how titles are rendered, showing that they come from a different language. And that is exactly what the intent of the placeholders was in the earliest examples of the so-called Christian New Testament. And so there is no Christian. There is no basis for Christian. There is no basis for Christ. And it's interesting. I told you that a bit of research will prove that the original basis for the placeholder was Christus, not Christos. That's an entirely different word, where one means an implement that is prepared to serve, a moral and honorable implement ready to serve. That's Christus. Christos means drugged. And so they even have that wrong. So the moment you start using the title Christian or Christ, it shows that you are ignorant of what, and ignorant means you just don't know. And from God's point of view, being ignorant isn't bliss. Being ignorant isn't an excuse. God says my people are destroyed for ignorance. Names are important. Titles are important. Words are important. And the very basis of Jesus Christ is completely wrong. Christ is not a last name. It's not a name at all. And that it has no basis even in the Greek account of the so-called Christian New Testament. And it is a complete abomination when compared to the Hebrew. And the same thing is true with Jesus. It's a man-made figment of someone's imagination. There is no Jesus. There is no Christ. And if you're going to claim to trust a religion or believe a religion that is based upon Jesus Christ, you have been played for a fool, because there is no Jesus Christ. And the moment you know his actual name and his actual title as Messiah, Yahusha, then you recognize that you ought not even be focused on him anyway. It's Yahweh who's saving us. It's Yahweh whom even Yahusha wants us to know. So, what I wrote to Adam was that I focus on Yahweh for the very reasons I've just shared with you, which is God's one and only name. I focus on his Torah, which means teaching, not law. And I trust what God has to say about his covenant, which is his family relationship, of which there's only one, which means that there cannot be a New Testament. That the very concept of a New and Old Testament is a lie, one perpetrated by Paul, one picked up and advanced by Marcion, that there is a second new and different covenant. That is an absolute lie. It's presented first in Paul's letter to the Galatians, which is the first letter Paul wrote. It has no basis in truth. In fact, Paul's every word to describe his new testament, his new covenant, is a complete fabrication. What he writes to justify it is the antithesis of what God has to say about the one and only covenant. Paul claims that the original covenant enslaves, and that it was based on Hagar, when God says exactly the opposite. So the very basis of a book called a New Testament, annulling an Old Testament, is completely bogus. There's only one covenant. In fact, even in Jeremiah 31, which is the passage that Christians cite to justify their New Testament, it says that it's the covenant is being renewed, that it's not new. And he says that it's renewed even with Yehudim and with Yisrael, not with Gentile Christians. And that they say, God tells us that the renewal of his one and only covenant is going to be different from the existing covenant in only one way. And that is that his Torah is going to be incorporated into the fabric of our lives, that Yahweh is going to write his Torah in us. So this notion that the Christian New Testament replaces a Torah that has been annulled, when God says the only difference in the reaffirmation of his covenant and the existing covenant is the total incorporation of the Torah into our lives, means that you have to either be ignorant or irrational to believe that there is a new covenant and a new testament. But it brings us really back to the main issue, which is that most Christians are deceived because they take a statement out of context. They'll read this new covenant, which is an improper translation of Kadash, which means to renew. And they'll read that it is different, but they won't bother to read the line that comes before that says that this affirmation is going to take place with Yehuda and Yisrael, not with Gentiles. Oops. Can't be for them. Or they won't read afterward where it says that the only difference is the total integration of the covenant of the Torah versus today, we're all in a position where we can choose individually and collectively to reject or accept the Torah. Christianity chooses to reject it because of Paul's letters. That option will not be possible when Yahweh returns. And the reason it won't be possible is everyone that will survive his return will have already embraced the covenant through the Torah. They will have already sought to observe the Torah. And they will all, everyone who survives his return, will desire a complete integration of a perfectly accurate and complete copy of Yahweh's Torah into their lives. We'll be back after the commercial break. I'd like to pause a moment and hopefully have what I've just shared sink in. There is no justification, none whatsoever, for Jesus. That the name was first used in the 17th century. It was the third edition of the King James Bible that first associated it with a Bible. The letter J wasn't even developed until about 50 years prior. And it was by a scholar who was uncomfortable with the soft Y-I sounds in Latin in particular, and wanted a way to begin names that began with the Latin I more aggressively. Like it's Julius Caesar, not Julius Caesar. It was King Iams, not King James. And that's when it began. And so the name Jesus dates to the 17th century, about 1635 to 1650 in that range when it was first used. It bears no resemblance whatsoever to Yahusha. There's not a single letter that carries over between the two. At best, you could say the name Jesus is meaningless, but it actually does have an association which should be troubling because Jesus, with a G, but pronounced the same way, was the savior of the Druid religion where the horned one is God. As for Christ, it is not a name, therefore it is not Jesus Christ. It is a very inaccurate translation of a concept that's not even presented as a title in the Torah. So we're in Daniel, where it's ascribed to Yahusha, it is a adjective. It means set apart and prepared to serve. It is reasonably translated by Christus, but that's an entirely different word than Christos. An E versus the I, a U versus the O in Greek. Sounds somewhat similar, but entirely different words. And it is a Hebrew concept, not a Greek concept, so transliterating the feeble attempt of Greek to translate it with a transliterate it, which is to replicate the sound of a Greek word that means to drug, is bogus, has no credibility whatsoever. So there is no Jesus Christ. And if the religion is based upon Jesus Christ, then it is lying about its basis. And then you get to the whole concept of a New Testament. It's something that Paul advocated that Yahweh says is not true. Covenant is always singular in his testimony. He says there's only one of them. He says that one covenant shall endure forever. He tells us that the covenant will be reaffirmed and it will be renewed, but there won't be a second one. It's the existing covenant that is renewed. And that existing covenant, when it is renewed, the only thing that's different from the covenant as it was lived by Abraham, Jacob, and Yishak is that that they had to choose to observe the Torah. And they were, as we all are, put in a position where you can reject the Torah, ignore the Torah, or embrace the Torah. Now, that will not be true when the covenant is reaffirmed. When the covenant is reaffirmed, the Torah is going to be written right inside of us. Yahweh himself is going to write a perfect copy of his Torah teaching and guidance right inside of us. Now, that alone, by itself, you don't need anything more. If you're a informed, rational individual to reject Christianity, it has no chance whatsoever to be an accurate reflection of anything that God has offered. Once you recognize that the reaffirmation of the Torah will be based on a wholesale and complete integration of the covenant, a wholesale integration of the Torah into our lives. Once you know that, you have to be irrational to be a Christian. Once you know that, you will recognize that the religion of Christianity is in wholesale conflict with God's testimony, and that Paul lied when he said that the original covenant enslaved and that it had been replaced by his new covenant. That's just as simple as it can be, folks. That's why you have a choice. You can put your faith in Paul and believe that God empowered him to annul his own testimony, to call him impotent, to call him mean. Or you can believe Yahweh. You can't believe both. It's one or the other.